Welcome back, crybabies.
Hi. Yeah.
Here we are, back to it. This is, I believe, episode 23 of the show, Children of the Sea.
Ooh, 23 Children of the Sea?
23 and Sea.
That's cute. Oh my
Let's
God.
Let's see if that's
Can
correct.
Can that be the name of the episode, 23 and Sea?
Yo, I mean.
23 Sea.
Please.
Studio 4C.
Studio 4C.
Studio 4C.
Oh man, I foresee some edits. So, babies, listen up. We're back. It's been a minute. Sorry, but we're back. And we're talking about Children of the Sea today. We let you know that a little while ago, last time when we mentioned it, I guess. So I'm Yosh, and I'm going to be today's DM, if it's not been made clear. Who else is here in this room? It's dark in here.
It's me, Le Petit Prince. I'm just kidding. Hannah's not with us today, but
oh,
I'm
shit.
Olivia.
Oh,
so
shit.
I will be taking on both roles. I will be Hannah, but then I will also be myself.
I will be no one at all times, but also everyone.
Tell me you're loose without telling me you're Lucifer.
I'm a fur, but not loose.
Oh.
I'm MK.
There's MK.
I'm here. I'm here physically, and that's all I can promise.
MK, MK's in our shirt pockets today. Just we have a tiny mic handed over to them.
I just realized I'm going to change your contact info in my phone from MK, your actual name, but to MK Ultra. I don't know why I didn't do that like a million years ago.
Yes, give me that power.
I'm just your Mortal Kombat in my phone.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's cool.
I like
that's
that.
Cool.
That's a good one.
It is a good one.
How do you feel to be doing literally DMing back to back? Last episode was Tech on King Crete, which was your pick. How do you feel about taking the reins yet again for Children of the Sea?
Coming back into the manifold.
The manifold. How do I feel? It's two movies that I'm pretty stoked about. Tech on King Crete and Children of the Sea had source material that, for Tekkon, I actually knew the source material before the movie. This time around, I knew the movie before the source material. An interesting connection between Tekkon that you bring that up. It's the same studio that made it, Studio 4C.
Oh.
So there's like certain shots where like they do like the 3D motion with the 2D.
Oh.
And it has like when they're moving and stuff.
Okay.
So that actually is an interesting, like, sort
I never would have guessed that. I mean, I can see it now that you're talking about it, but mm-hmm. just because the art styles are so different, I would have never guessed that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess if we're there kind of just doing some of the intro credits of it, like I said, Studio 4C produced it. It was released in June of 2019, that long, long time ago, before this, that was the before times. It's categorized on my anime list as a seinen. MK, can you explain what a seinen anime is?
Oh, it's just like targeted. It's like young adult. It's most probably male demographic, like people in their 20s, 30s. I don't know. I guess me is a target demographic for it.
It's targeted at me. yeah.
Cause it's not what our young adult means. It's a little different.
Yeah. It's also classified as drama, mystery, supernatural, and I feel like mystery is always a little bit of a misnomer to me. I feel like it's not that feels like too much of like a psychopath, like
yeah.
like that felt
yeah.
more mysterious. This is more just like in awe of nature.
Yeah. We also tend to think of mystery as in there's like some like crime aspect
yeah.
to it.
It's right.
like
a
I was
little
gonna
bit
say
of a
the same
thriller.
Thing.
There's like, not much crime here.
Right.
Yeah. And directed by Ayumu Watanabe. This is actually someone who they've been in the game for a minute. They've been in animation since at least the 80s, but actually only in more like recent years did they have like bigger directing credits. They've done a lot more like storyboarding and assistance with like animation. They actually storyboarded the first episode of Great Pretender. That's fun. And worked on that, which is just a random little beep beep. They've also done a couple shows. They did Ace Attorney, which is really funny. Just I think of the video games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They did, coincidentally, there's a movie called Space Brothers, which is basically what it's like, you know, like mysterious origin, two brothers. Weird.
There's also a series. I think that might be like a movie that came out after the series. I don't know if they were involved.
Oh, interesting. The series.
Yeah. And they also more recently, it even got like nominations and stuff, but there was a show called After the Rain, which I think MK and I watched the first episode of randomly. And it was about like this like high school girl who falls in love with like her middle-aged boss.
Oh.
And it's like a really like, where is this going? But like, it's actually really well rated. And like, I'm like interested to revisit it now.
Oh.
And I'm like, what the f-? Interesting. Because I remember watching it and being like, I don't know.
I wonder how it turns out.
Right.
Because there was a movie a while ago called An Education that I really like, but it was like in the 60s in like London. Mm-hmm. And it's a high schooler falls in love with like a much older man. But like the whole like lesson of it is that's bad.
Right.
But yeah, not in like a preachy way. It's like, it's just, it's like a coming of age story, I guess.
Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe that's worth revisiting. But also just keeping it with current events, there's a fall new release coming out that's directed by him.
I looked it up and I realized I've looked it up before because I heard about it when searching for new cutesy shows to watch.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's the
all cutesy.
I say cutesy.
It's a good it's a good search term.
Yeah. It's the adaptation of the manga Komi Can't Communicate. Look at all those consonants. Komi Can't Communicate.
We love that's alliteration.
Tough to say.
Yeah. And that's the point of the show, right? She has trouble speaking and she has to meet friends. But
meet friends?
Cuz she's
meet friends.
We're all meet. Well, actually no. Once you start meeting people through Discord and Zoom, they are not meet friends, they're just voice friends.
They have
not materialized. Yeah. So that's kind of like just a little bit of the backstory. I mean, so I think that a good place to start off with this. We always start with a question, a little personal exploration to kind of bring ourselves into the space. The movie starts out with sports, Ruka performing really well, the top of her game, it's where she says that she can fly. Babies, in your activities, in your lives, what are the sort of things that you've been involved in and the things that you've done where you feel like you can fly, like you have that sort of freedom and you feel like you're in the zone? I feel like this could also be asked about Skate the Infinity, but this is a Children of the Sea episode. We'll get there, babies.
We will.
Oh, we have to.
So honestly, something that I don't do anymore, but I actually really miss, I used to be really into kickboxing and I really miss the experience of like working on a bag. I used to do some sparring as well. I hate you. I used to do some sparring as well, and that was always really entertaining, fun. I don't know why I said entertaining. That was always really fun, but I think what I enjoyed most, or like what really gave me the sense of kind of like flying or just like being able to get into the zone, was like when you were kind of just doing shadow work, like with you yourself in a mirror. I guess this also like comes into like, I used to choreograph dancing a lot. And so I think that's something that between like dancing and kickboxing, it was an activity that you could do either with yourself or with another person. But that just really gave me like a sense of freedom and a sense of just pure joy. And I really miss those. And I really wish I had like a space where I could work on either right now.
I think for myself, it's either, I feel like the two places where that can happen, one is just biking. I feel like just especially like if you get like on a nice street that you could just, it feels kind of effortless, but like just that I've always enjoyed biking in the sense that like you're not moving as fast as a car, so you're still moving past things quickly, but you're still also a part of the people on the sidewalk. You're still like in the neighborhood, you're still like, you could stop at any second and immediately see, like, I always see new parts of a neighborhood on my bike than if I was in a car. So I think that, and then also with like a lot of the woodworking stuff I do, I can just kind of get in the zone that I'm like, oh my God, it's been 5 hours and I've been working on this. I thought I was like doing this for maybe two. And that's the sort of thing to me. Cause I think part of it too is like there's like a timeless element to it, like with the flying, where you're just, any sort of limitations, any rules are kind of temporarily suspended. So for me, I was thinking through like things that just hours can pass by and not even realize. And I think that's definitely one.
That's a really good point. I think mine would probably be swinging on a swing set, because you said bike riding. And I'm just having a very visceral response because I love a swing set. And I genuinely feel like, not even figuratively, I feel like I'm flying when I'm on a swing set. And I felt that way since I was a kid. It's like one of my most favorite, like, small things that you don't really get to do anymore. But it brings me so much joy. I feel on top of the world.
Did you ever do the thing where you like let go and then jump off?
Oh, and yeah. And you land on your feet.
And you die. Oh, yeah.
And then you die. No.
Yeah. I would be scared and I'd fall.
You gotta get the right height, because you don't want to land. You know when you would like play on the monkey bars and you land on your feet and you're a little pain that shoots all the way up?
Oh, because your knees are locked. Because
your knees are locked and you feel it in your feet. You gotta hit it at the right moment. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. It's so much fun.
Actually, yeah, I miss doing that. Mm-hmm.
Especially at different like times of the day, like, you know, early morning or like at recess, but also when it's like sunset and stuff and you're just, oh, it's so much fun. I like when you can reach up, like when you swing really, really big, that the like chains of the swing set also kind of like raise up or like bounce a little bit, because like,
oh, because they because like hit their peak,
they've hit their peak, yeah, where they aren't even like holding you up anymore.
Oh. So you do free fall for like a split second.
Yeah, just for a hot sec.
That's fun. I'm hiking, man. is that not okay?
That's good. We'll go with that.
I don't know. I just think being in nature is really nice, and like being away from noise and too many man-made things.
The sort of arc of the movie is kind of, you know, they set that up to be, even though the whole movie or most of the movie is not spent on that question directly, it's what they ultimately go back to at the end to be the resolution. And like, it's her being able to see the girl up the hill and be like, yay, I'm gonna play sports again or whatever. So I feel like at least early on, one of the main things happening is like, you have these passions and then you have to learn to overcome your own personality in certain ways, like preventing you from being able to.
What's continue. Preventing you from truly flying?
From truly flying, yeah. And as far as just another kind of entry point into the actual like meat of the movie, I feel like the we could just do like sort of first impressions with like the art and everything, because at least for me, the art's almost like distractingly loud the whole movie, like where everything is like, the colors aren't necessarily like bright or whatever, but all the line work, the faces people have, everything is so intricate. It's like almost spooky.
I wrote that in my notes.
The details and stuff. And like, I think that even just like from the title card, like they give a lot of different styles of drawing, right? Like from the jump. And they also, in the intro, they show you with the title card, they kind of set it up, the immediate idea of the eternal recurrence and how these two boys show up in different forms, many ways, because they show like these pairings of people in all these different cultures, like historical styles. And you know, I feel like that's just kind of like an early flex, like, oh, look at all these, like, look at our range. And then, you know, then the movie is illustrated the way it is. I haven't read the manga, so I don't know if it's just being totally faithful to it. And
that, oh, there's how a manga for it?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I
would say. Know, yeah, but, I mean, I will say, like, it didn't, it went in a direction that I wasn't expecting, because it was, I mean, initially you have a very simple plot, but the plot, once you watch it, it does go in a direction that it does kind of surpass any sort of simplistic storytelling. There are bigger things than just a simple plot line, because the plot itself is fairly simple, but what goes beyond that are the themes or messages from the movie through the animation, through certain characters, come through more towards the end, I would say.
I think, you know, if someone hasn't seen the movie, you've probably seen a movie like it. You have a student, it's summer vacation, they have questions, they have problems, and then they interact with people and things that are problems and thoughts on a much larger scale than their own little micro world. And they go through this big adventure with people into just larger than life experiences, and then can kind of return to their own little pocket in the world with a new perspective on things. Maybe they've been able to resolve questions that they asked at the beginning of the summer. I feel like that's kind of what the movie is doing in the plot.
So then it's a coming of age.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a coming of age story.
Totally.
You know, I think with some of these eternal recurrence plots, like the form, like the whole point is that the forms of things change, but the sort of meaning and the message stay the same. And it really is that kind of movie that, like, I almost feel like the plot, like the bones of it are just kind of a given. And like the art's really like the real message, and where, as far as like engaging the viewer on like a unique level and standing out as children of the sea rather than just this story you've already heard a million times, it's really in the sort of like art and the expression of the story that makes it interesting and at least unique to me.
Yeah, there was a certain amount of the art that I actually really enjoyed that was like part of why I really felt attracted to it. Was there was a certain quality about it where it seemed like very similar to Tech on Concrete, right? Where it was almost like you could see both three-dimensional and two-dimensional action happening, and it almost seemed like you were watching painting move or like oil move, and that was like really cool. And it kind of, I think, added to the, like, there's a lot of dreamy qualities about this film, like, right, it's very visually stunning. And I think I was just like very attracted to the kind of like dreamy landscape, but very real story that was being told, to certain degrees, right? One aspect of it that, you know, I think at least about the art, that really caught my attention was the fact that there was many dimensions of movement that was happening in it, right? Like there was times when the people were moving across two-dimensional landscapes, or when people were still, but the world around them was moving. And I think what was really beautiful about, especially how this town is set up, like there's also a lot of things that reminded me about Lou Over the Wall, just like because of the setting. But I think similar but different to Lou Over the Wall, this world actually feels like a lot more lived in, and it actually feels like a little more ancient. Like all of the, like every, there's like overgrowth on everything. Like the plants are just everywhere, almost to an extent where like we would see things as like, oh, you might want to trim that back, like that's a little dangerous for the structure of your house, right, sort of a thing. But there was this really like kind of ancient but lived in quality about it that I really, really enjoyed.
I thought it was gorgeous. I thought the animation was really beautiful. And it's funny, Josh, that you said it was kind of creepy at times, because I have that in my notes, but not in a creepy way, like I thought it was bad necessarily, more in like a old school Tim Burton, cool, pretty creepy way. I do enjoy the, like you were saying, Luce, there's a very lush quality, I think, to the town. And there's like the first scene of her running post her basically, you know, getting into that fight with that girl, and she's running through the town. And it was just gorgeous. I like all the close-ups of people's faces. Yeah, I just think off the bat, the animation is very rich and very luscious. And I enjoyed, it was kind of like a painting. I also enjoyed having you mentioned Lou Over the Wall, Luce. Seeing the difference in styles with like a similar or a story at least circulating around a beach town, and you have one in a very stylistic way that's like fun and goofy and like almost more flat. And then you have this story, which is like very rich and detailed and intricate. And I appreciated that there were movies in both styles.
Yeah, this is a very... It almost, like, there are moments where it takes kind of, like, the belladonna elaborateness.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, the dramatic, like, just shot of, like, a person's face and then, like, a really slow turn.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, how they'll do things like that to kind of just really accentuate the characters. I think something, too, about just the, in terms of making the space feel lived in, like, I thought that was, I was very aware of that in the aquarium scene in the beginning, because, like, they made a big point of showing all of the empty boots, all of the empty swimsuits and stuff that are just on hangers mm-hmm. and everything that, like, and you just, you get the sense that people are normally going through there, and it's, like, a peopled area, even when people aren't drawn in it. And I think that there's always, like, this reminder of other people's presence, even without them actually in the space. And something, too, is, like, within the world feeling, like, full and rich, like, I thought the sound design was really good. Like,
oh, yeah.
Inside the aquarium sounds airtight. Like, you're aware of all the glass and, like, all the pressure inside that room, because they even did a lot of, like, white noise
mm-hmm.
and things, especially, like, when she was going to go through that the padlock door to go to the back area. There's, like, that beeping.
Mm-hmm.
There was just a lot of, like, sounds that made you aware you were indoors and inside a place that you're just kind of a... contained within it, like within, like around tanks, but then like contrast that with the open stuff, it's like it's open air when you're out at the sea, it feels vast. I just think like details like that, like they paid a lot of attention to the world and creating it.
Yeah, I think this is my second time seeing it, and I think my first time I was mostly blown away by the visuals of it. But the second watch through, I think I paid much closer attention to the sound design and not only just the general tones and textures and feeling of a space, like where you could tell there's like a lot of glass or if it's indoors or outdoors, but the like Foley work of the rain, like during the monsoon, and how the texture of the rain changes when like she went from the road to the rocks to like where the people were crowded around to where all the dead fish were, and the rain, like the rain sound changed so well in that scene. And so I think just like the whole piece does a good job of having movement depicted really well, and like you were saying, a very lived-in space.
Yeah, it's funny because I had actually gotten this movie for nephews of mine that I realized while watching it that I was like, maybe they're a little too young for this, because you would see the trailer and you're like, this is a kids' movie. It's people just at the beach. It's nice, but it feels like a very mature movie. It's simple. Like, it's not mature in the sense that, you know, it's age restriction for violence or like,
oh yeah, or any sort of like weird restricted content.
Yeah, like it's just a mature movie, and especially the scenes with Anglade, the fucking dialogue and like what Anglade is saying and stuff,
yeah,
right,
is just so beyond the comprehension of a six-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
Unless it's like a six-year-old who's really philosophical.
Six-year-old's just there for the vibes, the color, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, this is definitely like when I started watching it, I didn't expect it to go in the direction that it did.
Yeah. I remember seeing the trailer for it with Luce in the theaters when we had gone to see, I think it might have been Ride Your Wave.
Mm-hmm.
Another movie at the beach. But it was just one of those things that I even kind of do this with the seasonals when we preview them, that there are just times where the art style is just, it just pops so loud and it's just so like, I want to see that. I don't care what the plot is. What is that? What is that? I want to see it. And that's what I saw the trailer for this movie. And I'm like, whoa,
I think
what is that?
Also, even though it is, a very, with the ending, a very big crazy, weird ending. Because of the art style and how beautiful it is, I would consider this something I would show to someone who doesn't watch anime. I would think this is a pretty good recommendation. Piece. Just to let someone know who doesn't watch it normally to be like, hey, would you like to enjoy a new art form?
A nice fantasia for you.
Kinda. Well,
yeah, and there's a lot of similarities of it too. Like, I think in a lot of ways it is a modern fantasia, you know. Mm-hmm. And Yash, even with like the whole with your nephews, right? I think it's one of those things where like I think that you did a service to them, because right now they're going to get caught up in like the art and the beauty, and also because the sound effects, like not only just like the sounds that are happening in the film, but the music itself, like the composition of everything is absolutely gorgeous. But it's one of those things that they're going to be able to revisit as they age, and they're going to be able to like pull different layers from it. And they're going to, as they mature in different spaces, be like, oh, this is what this film is pointing to, right?
Yeah.
Because I think the plot itself is actually pretty standard and very direct. I don't think there's actually too much that happens plot-wise, but what does happen is everything that's like occurring like around the plot, right? Like, if the plot is just like the kind of like core, like the just like the pit of the story, like the flesh of it is the art style, the characters that are coming through, all of these like different oceanic experiences, right? Which, I mean, like all of the shots that happen out at sea are some of the most, like, you know, to kind of wrap it, like bring it back to like what our question of is, like anytime they're at sea, like I see them all flying, right? Because there's just this unlimited space in which they have to move. And another callback, I think, that, or another similarity that occurs within Tech on Kinkreet as well, is the way that Umi moves through the ocean reminds me so much of the way that the characters in Tech on Kinkreet would like fall through the sky. And there's just so much similarity in that motion that I think that studio, right, does a really good job at showing you that there's more dimensions to space than we're accustomed to thinking of space in.
Yeah, I feel like also with the sort of being able to fly through stuff and like out at the ocean, it is a kind of like a matter of perspective, right? Like in the sense that Umi was flying to Ruko only when she was below him looking up and she could see him like that. And like, you know, when you're on the boat in the ocean, or you're even when you're at the surface, you're flying above what's below. What's below is looking up and you're all the way up there. As far as the art direction went, I thought they did a really good job kind of like carrying on the metaphor with the how the ocean and the sky were the same in certain ways. Like they would do the bioluminescence as if it was stars. And the vastness of the ocean and the darkness going down is a depth into a vacuum, or like an oxygenless space that you go into, that is that gravity doesn't work the same when you're in it. And it's got all these like bright, mysterious lights moving through it. But the same thing with the sky, and like the, how the earth is kind of this like weird middle ground, like how being ashore, because obviously the ocean is the earth, but how being ashore is like this weird, that's the liminal space. That's what's in between these two oceans. And you know, I think Anglais does a lot to explore that more directly, but.
Well, and I mean, you even see those parallels with the characters themselves, right? Like Umi being the ocean, Sora being the sky. And there's always this kind of like this movement to where these spaces meet each other, right? Like you have a lot of shots that are the horizon where you're actually not sure if you're looking at the sky or the ocean. And you have a lot of these, like, I mean, even in Umi's story, like, right, where it's just kind of like, where does he belong? Does he belong at sea or does he belong on land? And they kind of like, they kind of talk about both of the brothers that way in a lot of ways. But I think a lot of the like locus of like where the scientists are trying to explore is like, we see them performing more tests on Sora, but Umi is the one that we almost always have questions about or that we're almost always uncertain about. So even though Sora is the one that we see them on screen spending more time exploring, Umi's the one that they're trying to get answers about.
Yeah. Sora. Lashes.
Oh, lashes for days.
That
Lashes had, McGee.
Has the longest just wisps of hair. Even like in the shadows, it had like all the wisps. It's one of those things that at least for me, they're presented as vastly different. Like they, you know, especially on the surface level, they look really different, but
very hot and cold.
Yeah.
Yes and no.
Definitely some temperature disputes.
In, then you're out. Up, then you're down. No, I would agree. Although it's kind of crazy because they are presented very differently, but me as the viewer, I didn't question their closeness or their relationship, like them being, you know, brothers more or less. It's never established if they're like actually blood related, but like you don't question their bond, I guess I would say. They did a very good job. I was very charmed by both of them. Yumi for very obvious reasons, because since this is a coming of age story, I think the way he's presented is just, it's so, I want to kind of say cheeky, but not cheeky as like a trickster energy or cheeky as in like naughty. Just, I literally mean his cute cheeks. Like, he is a very youthful thing
like
about
Aang?
Him. Kind of, yeah.
No, very similar character type.
Yeah, and also, same thing, I guess, with, Sora has more of a more troubled or, like, I guess, cooled sort of vibe to him. But I just think, as far as being a child, like the youthful energy, I think Umi really, they did a really great job in embodying that like fun-loving, like spirit, like free-spirited sort of nature. Something I appreciated, especially I think because summer when you're young, man, like
that's the best.
It's the best. Like it truly is. Like in the very beginning, you know, Ruka talks about, my first day of summer vacation and it's already over. And it's like, no, honey, hold on to that. I'm telling you.
Well, and it's funny even to see like the way that, you know, Umi kind of has this like very like naive, almost like, I don't know what's going on personality about him. Whereas Sora is very much just like, Umi needs to be protected at all costs. Like there's something that's about to happen and nobody knows what it is. And we're not even sure what it is. We don't know what role we play in it. But we know that we play a very important role in it, and we need to protect our precious baby, regardless of.
It's Tekkon Kinkreet again.
Yeah, seriously.
Yo, true.
Yeah, the brother dynamic's very real, which is really funny, right? Because like, as like looking at them, you wouldn't think that they're like blood brothers, but then also just like realizing that like, arguably, they're not even human, right? So it's just kind of like the whole idea of like how we as human beings like think of brotherhood isn't necessarily the same as how they view brothership.
As far as like personality types, which are you more attracted to, the Sora or the Umi?
I think it depends.
Ooh. Sora.
I think. I mean, listen. it just goes to show the heart has no type, because I don't know. I feel the pull and the gravitation towards both characters, both energy. I think that originally Umi does kind of capture your heart because there is this like very, again, like it's just a very sweet, he just has that energy, like a very fun, youthful energy that I think because Sora has kind of the opposite of that, he seems a little bit more aloof and maybe more beyond his years, but both are great. Both have their time and place, and I think both are great. Would be BFFs with both.
It's funny for Ruka how like both brothers appeal to her sensibilities in different ways.
Oh,
like,
totally.
Because she has the sort of playfulness of Umi, but she also has that sort of like troubled seriousness.
Baby, that's a shoujo.
Now you're talking shoujo.
Welcome to our shoujo.
And I mean, in a lot of ways, I think welcome to our shoujo. I think please don't watch Mojo. Please do not. Anyways.
Oh my god.
In a lot of ways, I think, especially if you view them not like the way that Ruka
Ruka.
Ruka, thank you. The way that Ruka experiences them and the way that the other people experience them is as two individuals. I think when you think of the fact that they are actually like star matter and basically like the alpha and the omega, like the way that the universe like either births itself or like continues to produce life, I think in a lot of ways they're actually the same creature or the same form, just two separate manifestations of it that are necessary in order to continue to expand.
I think the moments that really pulled it together for me with them, there's that part where this is after the festival things begins and all of the horizon eclipse and whatnot. They're falling through the sky, and it was Umi the whole time that she was with. And then as they're in the air, the shadow becomes Sora when they break the fall.
Yeah, that was amazing.
So good.
And like, you know, because Sora is the protective one. And like how they are ultimately the same form. And like that's just at that point, they're already kind of like returning to it. And yeah, so, you know, that's the boys. Very distinct, the personalities diverge, but really come back to the same spot. And I think the other people I wanted to talk about, the other, it's a relationship, whether it's in the sense that people ship things or if it's just, you know, people relating to one another. But Jim and Anglade, I was like, I had to pause for a second. I always forget that person's name.
Oh, yeah.
Anglade, right?
Anglade?
Angela Merkel.
Yeah. Angela Merkel.
Anglade.
Yeah, the as Luce said, the Final Fantasy Knight, and really just in shining armor for all of us,
just waltzed right into my heart.
I know.
Yeah,
completely just set up a chair, sat down, took their damn spot.
Very comfortable. Very comfortable feeling.
Gave me those sleep deprived eyes. And...
I think you mean bedroom eyes.
Well, that's a good one. Just like, oh, you got bedroom eyes
bedroom
today.
Bedroom eyes, yeah.
Like, oh, thank
because
you.
It can also mean like in a sultry way, but I can also, I guess, in this context, mean a
sleepy. Just like a little sleepy.
Yeah. We love an androgynous character. Also, just the first time he's ever on screen, and it's just like shirt is on but fully unbuttoned, and he is not wearing a shirt beneath it.
Mwah. Yeah, because, you know, I think also, like, they're more introduced after the typhoons kind of started. And they're hitchhiking out of town, and it's like, where are you taking me? And then it's this little, like, beach alcove. And this is where Jim and Anglade are. And, you know, I feel like this time around my second viewing, I kind of ignored Jim the first time. But I think that Jim actually has, like, a lot of interesting moments. You know, they're obviously, you know, with these plots being very predictable in a sense, like, you know, he gives the sort of let's trouble the motivations of the scientists. Is it all for good? Because he's, you know, talking to what looks like, you know, either military people or very powerful people and explaining and trying to, like, give them information that they need about the festival and everything going on. So you kind of like doubt him a little bit. You're like, what is he doing? Is he going to sell people out?
He would never.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. Like, at least I've only watched it once, but I don't know if I ever questioned his motivations. I actually saw him as someone that was just like very curious and trying to understand more. Right. And like, it's interesting because as he's like interacting with like these, like, government officials or like military, like whoever it is that they are, I think there's this like really interesting moment in which like he realizes that like, and like you could almost see this happening, right? Like they need a certain amount of funding in order to continue their research, but then the research hits a point where it's like all of a sudden now the like government's involved or the military's involved, and he's like, crap, we need this money to continue this research for something that is, like, he's not quite on either end, right? Because, like, he's not on the spiritual side of things. He's curious and he wants to know what's going on. And I think he has good intentions in wanting to care for these children. But I also think that there's a moment where he realizes that his role in this entire thing has put them at risk. And I think that's when he, like, that's when he's like, all right, we need to pull out. We need to delete the files. Like, he talks to Onglade and he's just like, my dude, you're still, like, you're watching after those kids, right? Because I've done everything that I can in order to protect not only these kids, but this, like, this thing that's about to happen.
Yeah.
This rebirth.
Because, I mean, similarly, an open shirt, just chilling.
Yeah.
Just island Zad. Vibes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. I never questioned his motives. Like, I never got a bad sort of thing from him. But it is interesting to see, because we do have, like, the opposite. You know, we have that relationship. We have Onglade that is the more, you know, spiritual, big picture kind of questioning, but also very aware of, you know, universe and how it works, because you are unsure of how it works kind of way. And then we have the more, I guess, pragmatic Jim, very proud of him when he deleted those files.
Hell yeah.
Very proud. Mm-hmm. And, like, yeah, it was one of those things where it was not a matter of if he was going to do it. It was just, like, when he was going to. Because I think even though he only pops up here and there, I think they established a very sturdy character.
And he got introduced right when Ruka wandered in while he's playing the whale songs.
Yeah.
Like, what a cool introduction to kind of be like, it makes him feel like an anchor character or like a pivot point.
Ooh, going with the sea themes, an anchor character. Yes. That was great.
I actually almost found that Onglade's, we're just going to pronounce his name a whole variety of ways, I suppose. I actually found that his introduction almost came out of, like, I was almost confused when all of a sudden they were sitting on the beach and here's, like, Papi Chulo, like, with his shirt, like, unbuttoned. And he's, like, he's mysterious and, like, you know he knows things. But even his relationship to the boys isn't really explained. And it isn't until Jim comes and, like, talks to him that you're aware that him and Jim are partners, not, like, in the shipping sense, but in the, like, they're, like, operating
in the boating sense.
In the boating sense. Exactly. Not in the shipping sense. In the boating sense.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Fuck. That's funny.
I think one point about, like, what each of them are involved in, too, like, the similarly, how you have, you know, Umi and Sora, like, sky and sea, or sea and sky, I guess, in that case. You know, Onglade is the one with the telescope looking at the stars, and Jim's the one with the equipment looking at the ocean. And aww. So you also have that kind of dynamic where they're both, you know, each pairing has people set in different directions, but they all return to the same point. And I think that's the whole shebang. That's the whole movie, is just any starting point returns to the same thing that, you know, and especially with Onglade, that is, like, if it's not made, or if it's not communicated to you through the plot, that part alone is just a freaking monologue about what's happening, and Onglade just, like, really laying it on thick about eternal recurrence.
I was going to offer up another pair, actually. Ruka and the Shepherd of the Sea.
Oh, hell yeah.
Because that also fitting in with this eternal idea of eternal, what are the phrase we keep using?
Eternal recurrence.
Thank you, eternal recurrence. Just like you have these, you know, the pair of brothers, and then you have Jim and Onglade, you also have these two characters that I think are also a pair, because it all comes back to the beginning when, did you ever get her name? I can't remember if we did or not.
I always just know her as the Shepherd of the Sea.
Yeah, the old lady who is buddies with Onglade and has her own little boat. But at the very end, you know, when Ruka hears her playing the mouth harp and goes over and she's like, you know, I was about your age when I also met a very mysterious boy from the sea. Like, stories are similar too, and, like, she ends up tying it off too. So we also have a third pair, I guess, that also mimics the same thing. Like, you have people returning back to where they've been.
It's interesting that you bring up, you know, that kind of like that third coupling, because if like we think of the like the spiritual aspect of what this is, right? Like, you have the Trinity right there, but each part of the Trinity has a duality to it, which is a really cool aspect, and like how they map out the constellation of characters, if you will.
Do we have any more thoughts on Onglade before moving on? I feel like that's just like we could spend all day on the Androjo Dreamboat. I mean, that's you know, I feel like as my hair gets longer, I like hope to get it to like that point.
It's long.
It's long.
That's long hair.
Then you
also
can
you
float.
you got a little thickness, so that's good. Like yeah. if it's thick hair, I feel like I have really straight hair. Then it's long, or it was longer, but it always looks better when you have like thicker hair to work with. So yeah. You'll get there.
Oh yeah, that's looking forward to it. Looking forward to it. Looking upward to it, to the sky to tell me when it'll happen. Though I do remember as a kid, I had like maybe when I was like 10, I had a flash of what I was gonna be when I was 30, and it was a music video in a jail cell, like a like just some like filters on the camera, but I had long hair in it, and I was like, I'm not gonna have long hair at that point. That's a weird way to think of it. And now I'm like, huh, interesting. I'm getting close to 30, and my hair is long.
Oh my god.
So. I think that all of these things are pointing at you know, with the word keeps coming up, eternal recurrence. This is just Cloud Atlas in an animated movie.
Coming back to it.
Coming back to it. But, you know, I think that the metaphor is just beaten over the head throughout the movie. They find there are so many objects that they use to kind of play with this idea. I mean, there's so much attention on eyes. And how eyes are like the window of like the inner universe, and like there's this sort of, they literally have like the horizon eclipse, where it's just literally anything that is distinct is blended, and the line between things just becomes unclear, and you know I think they play with it especially the Shepherd of the Sea when she's talking to Ruka when they're out on the boat, like. Just talking about how, I guess the Shepherd of the Sea and Onglade, just talking about how there is just vast amounts of information that is like just ancient and that is constantly being communicated. There's so much truth to reality that is beyond our perception. We are all babies. Some of us cry, some of us bottle it up and get mad at stores. But, you know, we're in the cry club, so we're on that side of things. And... you know, I think that they just play into the mystery of the world. They make the world that is observable, they try to, like, make it as mysterious as the things you can't see. And that's something that I just, you know, I enjoyed that they played with the movie, and I thought that was, like, it's cool that they bring it up, but again, I originally had the impression that this was, like, a kid's movie, and, like, yeah. it just goes there. It just really, like... goes there and explores stuff in a way that, you know, I think some people might not be prepared for. But, you know, in another way, hey, this will work for different age groups watching it at the same time. Everyone will be watching something else.
Yeah, like, totally.
You'll all see the same thing, but you'll receive different things, I guess, if that makes sense.
I think with that also, the whole element of rebirth, and I guess that's what the whole festival is, it's the birth, there's going to be a birth of a new universe. I'm gonna be so honest, at some point it just kind of went a little bit over my head, but the whole entire sequence was crazy.
It was just 2001 Space Odyssey,
yo. But was this not Neon Genesis?
Well, so the way that I read like the recurrence, right, in a lot of ways is that there was that life is kind of always being birthed. And so there's, because they even mention it, right? Like there's always this like moment where they're talking about like, oh, we thought we had more time. We thought we had more time. We thought this wasn't going to happen till the new moon. And it's actually happening during the full moon. And if you like see, there's like this one shot that happens during that whole birthing sequence where it's just like this giant column connecting both the sea and the sky. And a lot of theology, like that would be considered like a Sephiroth, like a tree of life. And so the idea behind that is that like the tree of life always exists and it's what's connecting numerous realms, that all have some matter occurring within them. And if you read life as matter or matter as life, then I think that that's what's going on. While on their plane, they're already living and they're already like acknowledging of the fact that this, that life exists around them. What we're seeing is kind of like, yeah, it's the birth of a new universe, or kind of just like the expansion for more life, for more availability of opportunity. Also, sorry, also just in the fact that like they're constantly talking about how the whales are communicating on a slightly different frequency that they ever have, and that they're communicating so much with that sound, I think is supposed to parallel that. Like sound is traveling, life is traveling, there's movement occurring that in and of itself can be read as creation in a way.
And just a quick jump on that with the frequencies and stuff. The whales are the one frequency, and again, with observing the universe and the stars, Anglade knew the frequency of the star dying.
Oh, yeah.
698.45 hertz.
Oh.
But
which is the same exact frequency when Sora's little comet went past through the sea.
Oh.
Very
yep.
sweet.
Bye-bye.
I just feel, as someone who was asked in their freshman year acting class to give birth to herself, I can really relate to this entire sequence. That was literally real. I had to do it. Acting, don't go to school for acting. Do whatever you want. But the sequence of the whole rebirth thing. Okay, well, just because I want to touch on this, because the seahorse thing. Just
oh, yeah,
because
yeah.
I think the whole, because we were talking about the difference between like the rebirth, but like who, what is the seed? Who is the person that conceived versus who is doing the birthing?
Carrying it.
Who is carrying? Yeah, exactly. And so I think it's just a very interesting triangle, I guess, between Sora and Ruka and Umi. Like, because Sora's the one who gives the meteorite to Ruka to hold on to, that's ultimately meant for Umi. But like she does experience like this a part of the birthing of this new consciousness universe, whatever the fucking hell we want to call it. But then ultimately, like, it is given to Umi, or he kind of takes over the whole, just that entire sequence when he like reaches within her, grabs it and like eats it himself is crazy.
He like sniffs really? Her mouth.
Oh my god, that is crazy too.
That was wild.
Well,
the animation for that.
It's kind of funny, right? Because there's that moment where he like he reaches inside her, he goes to put it in his mouth, and she actually stops
yeah,
him
she
from
tries to
eating
stop him.
It. And then she tries to go for it first, and then they kind of like battle for it. It like I agree. I'm not like exactly sure where she kind of fits into this. The way that I read it is that not to bring this word up again, but I think she's the catalyst for it. I think in a lot of ways she's the safekeeper and the kind of like you need that special little ingredient, and that special little ingredient is going to be different every time, because I really do see especially like, doesn't he turn into a seahorse at one point?
Yeah, he does.
Yeah,
physically does.
That was his zodiac sign.
Look, the sea dragon.
Okay.
Fruits basket. Anyways, the emergence itself happens when Sora and Umi combine to become one again. But I think they need something to kind of act as an enzyme to that. And I think her holding on to that and safeguarding the meteorite is what is that special ingredient that allows this to happen again. So even though she's the one that holds on to it, like, that seed needs to be extracted from her and then given back to Umi, because Sora was the one originally holding on to it.
Well, and there is the implication that she has to be there for it to happen, because the shepherd old lady, they're implying that she was once
the same
person,
yeah,
right, in exactly this thing. And I don't know, I hate to bring it up because I hate thinking about it, but like, it could be that she represented like conception, and then because with the seahorses, the female seahorse conceives or like makes the eggs or whatever, but then like, you wait until they hatch and gives them to the male seahorse. I guess that's how it works, right?
The male seahorse like actually carries the,
yeah,
the baby. The babies.
She like gives them to him in the belly. Mm-hmm.
Yes, like literally, no, the male seahorses are the pregnant ones. Marine biologists, hit us up.
Oh, wow. It's like a Montero, right? Isn't that the whole,
yes,
leading up to it?
Lil Nas X, sponsor this video.
Sea dragon, our famous sea dragon.
I think also there is a moment in the beginning that I'm wondering now if this is what they meant, because I don't think they ever bring it up again, but there's a moment when Sora first meets Ruka and is like, they smell the same, and that's like why he's like, all right, I'll trust her, I'm down with her. And I wonder if it is this whole cyclical thing where this has happened before, if by them saying that they smell the same, implying Ruka smells the same as someone else, if they mean Shepherd of the Sea, saying that they smell the same, implying Ruka smells the same as someone else, if they mean Shepherd of the Sea.
Really just the whole, you know, eternal recurrence that they just slap you over the face with this whole thing. They use your dugong fins to smack, smack, smack. and that's actually one last thought with the boys, is that, you know, after the whole event goes down, you see the two dugongs going out to sea together. Aww. And you're like, oh, it's them leaving. But then when she's on her way to the, when she's running to school, you see the two kittens playing on the stairs.
And in the post-credits scene, birth happens again.
Oh, yeah. Which I almost missed if it wasn't for me looking at your notes, Josh.
Honestly, I think we missed it the first time. We didn't watch
Definitely
it.
Definitely did.
Yeah, so it was interesting. And actually something about that, the post-credit scene, in the beginning, they do that whole thing with the aquarium attendant when she sees Ruka, that she's like, oh, you have your father's eyes. That's why I recognized you. And I feel like as the movie goes on, and especially like they cement it in the post credits, that Ruka's eyes actually become more like her mom's eye color. And at the end, they have the same eye color. Mm. And I just thought that that was like this whole interesting arc for her to get there, because, you know, we didn't really touch on it in this episode, but there is, you know, a sort of plot of alcoholism in the family, and
yeah, a little bit of a little mommy issue.
She
does say to Umi, ugh, my mom's here, she's the worst, and they're running away.
Yeah. And, you know, she had taken temporary like work leave for reasons that I really don't think they explore.
Alcoholism.
I'm actually going to take off work for a month, guys, because I'm going to drink.
I'm really behind on my alcoholic tendencies, and I got to...
So there's also, I have a sneaking suspicion also that it has a lot to do with the fact, because, like, both of her parents worked at the aquarium, like, they had separated, and that maybe led to the mother's alcoholism. That's why she took time off, because there's that one scene where he comes back and he's like, look, I want to be forgiven. I think we need to be in this home together. I think that's what's important. And he like takes the trash can, yeah, with all the alcohol cans
that they keep
out,
featuring.
Right?
I think he also says, I think we were meant to stay together as a family. It's a very weighted and fated way of phrasing it.
Very woke.
And they share, what are those, like, those jellies that they share?
Oh, yeah. I don't know. They kind of look like when you peel, like a lychee or something. You know, they kind of have that,
like,
sort of...
Maybe, like, peach. I when I first saw it, I thought they were, like, cut peaches. Like, just shaped, like if you use, like, an ice cream scooper to cut it so that they all have that ball shape. And to me, that was one of the more, like, conventional just fixtures was like, oh, I have like one parent at home's having trouble. Oh, they reconcile and now everything's okay. And like that was one part that at least, you know, leaves Ruka in an improved state. Like, it's basically the rebirth of the family.
Yeah.
It, you know, this whole process, if anything, like that feels like the rebirth that's going on is because it leads to this brother getting born, this whole thing. And like, and if it wasn't for them hitchhiking and getting away and all of these things that, you know, got the parents panicked and made them have to cooperate and work together to solve this problem.
Trauma bonded them.
They trauma bound the parents, but you know, it leaves Ruka with the family in a new state. Hopefully repaired, you know.
I think it's implied it's on its way.
I mean, the dad wasn't at the hospital, but
maybe he was getting snacks.
Wow. Yeah. Maybe snacks, he was taking a, like, ugh.
Wow.
That doesn't mean he wasn't there for the birth. It just means he wasn't in the room.
Yeah. Someone had to bring controversy corner. Sorry, Hannah.
Oh, that's right.
Hannah asked.
Oh,
Hannah,
no, I have more controversy.
Oh, should we get right into it?
Let's get there.
Okay. In the spirit of Hannah, I would like to point out that the fact that there are really only two... what are you doing? Is this like just a weird thing you're doing?
I was just going to say the Hanopticon.
Hanopticon.
Oh my God.
In the spirit of the Hanopticon, I think it is interesting, like, and this is something that we're like constantly talking about within anime and like representation, right? Like, there are only two characters that would really be considered like characters of color in this film. One of them is Umi, which is like very cool. But then the other one is the shepherd, right? I always think it's like an interesting point to bring up because she is like very like quote unquote grotesque in a lot of ways, while a lot of the other characters are just like gorgeously painted, right? So like it just makes you wonder like what is the reason for that. But I also think that it has a lot to do with like because they're in a beach town, I think she's Polynesian, and because she's like actually from like from one of the islands that is like not considered part of Japan, like that would be like maybe the in-universe explanation for it, because the instrument she's playing is a typical Polynesian or a traditional Polynesian instrument. I forgot the name of it, unfortunately. I wanted to look it up.
A mouth harp? Well, I guess that's what we called it.
I called it a mouth harp. Well, a mouth harp is an actual instrument, yeah. But I don't know if that's what it's actually
like,
called.
She might
they have their own name.
She might even be Vietnamese. Like, so like there's like all of these like in-universe explanations that I could find for her being darker skinned than all the other characters.
There's also just Japanese people with dark skin.
Right.
Does it ever specify what, when they like run away, does like, it's implied that they are away, far, far away from their beach town, but does it ever like specify how far away? Like, how far did they travel?
I mean, probably what, like 12 hours? Something that felt like a...
I don't frick ass, no.
Couldn't have been days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait.
No.
Pause. I'm gonna pause controversy corner, and I'm gonna open up a little sweet swing. I want to swing on that for a little bit.
Yeah, sweet swing.
Them, Ruka and Umi, and their little hand holding all the time. So sweet. Huge fan. Anytime they showed it, it was just it because it happened multiple times and in a lot of situations where it was like transportation. I just found that very sweet. That was very wholesome, and I really loved that.
Or Umi and Sora playing with each other.
Oh yeah.
Sora, like there's that part at the aquarium where like Sora like climbs up on Umi and they're like like tussling around, and then they like, and like Ruka looks and is like almost embarrassed to see them like oh
yeah.
Wow.
Like, and that's very much like, that reminds me very much of like how dugongs play with each other, right?
Aww.
Like, and it's just like, it's one of those moments that like makes them almost more human, but the character, like those traits are like, even you would see cats playing like
that,
right?
It surpasses humanity.
Yeah, but it almost makes them more human than all of the humans around them. Like, I don't know.
The Dugang. The two boys. Because I also thought just one last thing with the shepherd was that I thought it also could have just potentially been that she was just
really old.
Old and a life at sea.
Yeah,
just
I feel
sunburned.
Like when you've been
just,
like,
just that,
on the sea for freaking forever.
It's just interesting because, I mean, like, Jim, he's a marine scientist and he was older.
He's a scientist, so he's inside. on his computer.
Okay, maybe. I like, I don't know. I feel like, whatever.
Well, also, fine. But to your point earlier about her representing the crone is always hunched, usually hooded.
Yeah.
But like is always wrinkly and kind of like exaggeratedly skin saggy old. So
what's really interesting about her also is that like I actually like when I was like when we were watching this and like when she's saying like, oh, I once had like, you know, I once had a boy that came to me from the sea sort of thing. She reminds me a lot of Calypso, like the goddess of the sea, mm-hmm. you know? And so like even like at like not to bring Disney into this, but like within Pirates of the Caribbean, Calypso is also represented by a black voodoo woman, right? And so it's just like this like really interesting like way of like hinting at maybe these like other stories, these other mythologies that are usually seen in these like cycles of life and death. And so like I don't know if maybe she was just like an homage to that.
I have a really good controversy corner. Well, it's not so much a controversy dun, dun, dun. As it is just kind of like a bummer.
Bummer corner.
Kind of just bummer like corner. A bummer. But because the animation was so colorful and bright and rich, there's that one scene when Ruka is swimming with the boys in the ocean and it's so colorful and you see all the coral and the fish and it made me really sad because I was just like, ooh, that coral does not look like that now. Coral is dying and dead. The ocean is not as colorful as it should be or used to be because our planet is dying. So that did bum me out a little bit.
Yeah, I feel like if they do like a climate change version like 20 years from now, Sora's gonna be like, can I actually just like comet back into space this time? I'm sick of doing it into the ocean. I want to like shoot up instead
of just
a lot
of trash and like oil and
yeah,
everything's dingy.
Yeah,
that bummed me out.
I mean, yet another reason why it's good to give to your younger ones because they can grow up seeing what the sea's supposed to be looking like.
That's true. That is true.
Maybe inspire some change for the future.
Yeah.
I decided if I get picked, I'm going to do Fern Gully.
My favorite anime.
All right, so I'm gonna take one
Thank
name
God,
out
Tim
of the.
Curry.
I'm gonna take a name out of the pen.
Oh my God, are we actually gonna start drawing now? Oh my God,
no,
I was like, no. Is there anything controversial? I feel like I wish there was something juicy Hannah's missing.
I think that the one thing to me that did feel that I wasn't exactly sure how to feel about it was the whole like. Ruka didn't really ever understand or have a say in her role in what happened. Like she didn't know what the meteorite was for. She didn't ask for the kit. Like there's just all these things that happened to her and she was a catalyst for all these things, but it was like never a moment where it was like, "Oh, I can help however I can. You want me to do that? Great, let's do it." It's like, we're not going to explain what this thing does. Just here, I'm going to kiss you. Hold on. Gulp. Don't worry about that. That'll be important later. Someone else is going to come sniff your mouth and they're going to reach into your heart and pull it out. And you're going to make the ocean explode. And, it's never a question. It's just she kind of has to go through it. So I'm like, I was a little like, and because these are younger kids too, that you're like, holy shit. Like what an experience for someone.
To be fair, there was that one part where she was like, he was like, I don't know if you can handle this next part. And she's like, I want to look. I want to see it. I don't know.
Yeah.
Not that that's
the universe being birthed. Well, I feel like one part of it, this story being one of the basic stories that's been told again and again by like every culture on the planet. When you're one of those characters, you don't really like it's you're just fulfilling a role, you know, in a legend or whatever.
And Sora even says that to her.
Really?
Yeah, when they're in the belly of the whale, he says, you know, you can stick around if you want, but you've served your purpose.
Oh, that's so right. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, and that's when she's like, yeah, no, I want to see it. Mm-hmm. If I make it through, I want to see it.
That's like probably the first time she like actually gives like actual consent.
Yeah.
But my true controversy with this is I love a story about like a second chance or a fresh start. But I just hate pregnancy imagery. I just get so uncomfortable. That's my controversy. I don't want to see it.
Interesting.
I do think after Belladonna, I don't know what else will make me uncomfortable.
Have we created a new scale?
That one.
Well,
yeah.
Very much in the spirit of Hana, it begs the question, why are we always asking middle school girls to save all of humanity?
Yo.
Truth, that is.
Hannah's going to listen to this and she's going to do that, yo, and then start doing some clapping or snapping. That's so true.
I hope we did you proud, baby.
So, I mean, as far as like the big picture, the whole movie, I've explored it. Kind of like the details of it, but I mean, just the experience of it is what moved me. Just the like we mentioned Fantasia, just those moments of wow. That's really what got me the most, was just the animation. And you know, time for the old cry scale, wheel it out on its old cart, like the TV when the substitute teacher's hungover. It's time for that. Crime scale.
Wow.
A crime scale.
Crime scale.
You really are trying to go to jail, aren't you? Huh?
This is a My Psychopath episode.
The cry scale.
It's really funny. The second time, I actually felt less moved by it. I think to me, it might have been maybe just where I was the first time, and even just the wow factor of it. I think the wow factor, like the first time I saw this movie, I felt like the air kept getting taken out of me because I just kept being like, whoa, whoa. And like, especially all of the underwater sequences where things are moving quickly. I was just feeling pulled along. And, you know, that referencing back to that point about Ruka being pulled along, it's like a current. But, you know, I would say that this was probably, I'm going to put it at a 3, because the first time I saw it felt like a 4, and the second time I saw it felt like a 2. So I'm going to average them out and say that for me it was a 3 out of 5 on the cry scale.
I think I was very moved by it and I really liked it. It didn't make me cry, although I think in a different day when I wasn't watching it like semi hungover in my bed, maybe I would have cried. But I also don't really remember. Each one of us has our own different version of, I guess, what the cry scale means for themselves personally. So I don't really know if I would give it like a number, but I would give it like a very satisfied, I wanted to say sigh, but I wouldn't say that either. I think it was good. I'd recommend it to people. I don't know where that falls on the scale. I wouldn't give it a fucking 10 out of 10. But I think it's a really great movie that I would recommend to others, and I think it's really beautiful, and it has touched me that I will remember it. It didn't scar me like some other things have, but it will stick with me. I'll definitely remember it, and I'll definitely watch it again.
Yeah. I'm like picturing the things scarring me. I'm like, Evangelion, Belladonna.
the two things that I picked. Thanks, Josh.
And wow. That was the point.
They're pretty scarring shows.
Yeah, I tried to pick some really,
I feel like, you know, the cry scale, everyone will have their own version of it. It's kind of like the 1 to 10 happy scale to sad of pain when you go to the hospital. And they have, like, the face, and it's just on a 1 to 10. Something abstract is pain, giving that a number. We're giving emotions numbers. Yeah. Emotions are like pain, but just above ground, and the pain's the root.
So if it's 1 to 10, I'll give it a freaking 7. 5.
Similarly, there's no cry scale for this for me. I don't know if there's any moments that make me go like, oh my God, like that would, like, I think it's beautiful. I think it's a beautiful film, and very similar to you, Yash. I think there's like moments where, like, especially as a first watch through, like, you're just like, wow, this is gorgeous. That being said, I think kind of like what you were talking about, Liv, the end can be a little heavy-handed. And so I think wherever your like emotional range is at that time, you're kind of just like, whoa, oh my God. I just like, I'm overstimulated almost. And so like, even if you are experiencing emotion, I think that end takes it out. And if there was a moment I would cry, it would be at the end credit scene, which like, if you don't if you're not someone who watches the credits or like skips through them to see if there's an end credit scene, like you might miss out on that. So yeah, no cry scale.
She's like, yeah, I would cry if I was a baby. If I was a child, I'd
cry. Yeah, if I was a little wimpy baby, maybe I would have cried.
Yeah. I said what I said.
Wow. Okay.
I think for me, it would be maybe like a one, because I don't remember whether or not I cried the first time I watched it, but if we watched it together and you cried, I probably also cried. This time there were no tears. Yeah, I think so. Similarly, it's about where I am emotionally, or I think it's because it's such a grand tale and a, you know, repetitive story that is of repeating. It kind of sits at a higher place emotionally, or a different place. Like, so I don't know. I don't find myself projecting into or onto this story at all. I just, it's a tale that I enjoy and I think was represented beautifully.
Yeah. Fair enough. I mean, I think that if there is a criticism for the movie, it's that because the plot is so conventional and predictable, the animation is really where I could have been moved to tears. And in that sense, there's like kind of a lack of connection with it. But, you know.
All right, fuck you guys. I felt connected as hell. I thought it was sweet. Liz is like, ugh, no.
No, I actually thought it was really sweet too. I think it's just a very beautiful film. Like, I think all of the like interactions are very human, and I think that's what makes it so enjoyable. And yeah, I do agree. It's sweet.
It's sweet.
It's sweet.
It's very sweet.
Yeah, Children of the Sea.
I think it was a good pick, Josh. I enjoyed myself.
Thank you.
I did too.
A choice, a film.
I would love to see it in theaters, like surround sound, screen.
Then maybe I might cry.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I want us to like on the IMAX screen. I want this to be, and we can all like eat part of an edible and just go cry to our heart's content.
Oh hell yeah,
yeah. We would be like, someone from the like theater would come in and be like, sorry guys, just
you guys are causing problems.
Yeah, you guys are a little loud.
You guys can keep it down. You can quiet the whimpering. I think is making some of the other.
I thought this was a private showing.
What is she? Can you get her off that wall? She's climbing the curtain. Hannah, get down, come here. Yeah. So that's Children of the Sea. Time for.
Is it time for
next one?
Picking our next.
Because we're really coming towards the end of this season.
Oh, yeah. Only two more.
Only two more on this. Where's the other one?
This one. Yeah, you just have one.
Okay. It is Olivia.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm so glad it wasn't me. I was fingers crossed it wouldn't be me.
Oh, wow. Oh, God. See, I was afraid.
Perfect Blue.
Shut up! Okay? I literally was.
No way. No
way.
Well,
I was thinking about it. Well, when I say I literally was, I was going to pick that literally, but not this time. I had decided against it. When I thought I was going to get picked last time, I was going to pick that, but I've since changed my tune.
Mm. What now?
A hard left. Kiki's Delivery Service.
Oh, nice.
Yay. Oh, shit.
Cool.
Yay. You said no more kids' films, but fuck you, Josh.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Kiki's Delivery Service. I get to pick two movies, and I pick both of them about witches.
Yes. True. One that fucked us up, and the other one that's going to leave us feeling
good. It's going to heal us.
It's down. My apology.
Oh, no.
Yes. It's my apology letter.
It's my apology letter. Sorry.
And then we know next episode, MK will be picking.
So yeah, you have plenty of time to think on yours.
Plenty of time to figure out Ferngully.
Yeah.
Well, all right.
Yep. So as we wrap up, you know, follow us on our socials. If you go to Instagram, it's crybaby_anime club. If you go to Twitter, it's crybaby_anime minus the club. And now we have a little announcement time. We are You know what, Liv, do you want to tell us what's going on?
Sure. Similar to how I used to hate anime and now I love it, I used to hate TikTok, but now, guess what?
Crybabies. You love it!
I love it, and now, Crybabies, we have a TikTok. So, future content will be available, and our TikTok is CryBB Anime Podcast. That's BB as in two little letter Bs, but it's all one word, CryBB Anime Podcast.
And, you know, in places where you find the show, there's more information listed, like emails and whatnot. We are currently in the early stages of working on a Discord. If you're interested in that and want to join, just reach out to really any of the accounts and let us know. We could figure that out for you.
Where can people listen to us?
Wherever you get your podcasts.
Wait,
the internet.
Wait, where are you?
Where are you?
Where are you hearing this?
Where? How did you find us?
How did you find us?
How did you get this?
How did you get this recording? I think that'll do it for this time around, all right?
Oh, yay.
Babies, see ya.
See ya later.
Bye.
Babies out.